Off the ball.
Rugby.
No, I've probably apologised for the first one. I think that's where you have to get rid of that in rugby. You know, tucked shoulder to the head. Because then guys aren't going to jackal, so, you know, that just, my only thing for Leo now was to say sorry for that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
More excited about the World Cup or the Championship?
Today, I think I'm...
You feel Donegal.
I feel Donegal. I'm very excited about the GAA Championship. I have to say that. I've struggled to get excited about the World Cup, but I think that's just because it was so far away and it was a figment of our imagination for the last couple of weeks. But yeah, very excited for the World Cup as well. Regardless of what anybody says, look, there's obviously going to be a lot of chat about everything that's going on with this World Cup. But there will also be a lot of chat about the football, which is ultimately what it's about.
The soccer.
Soccer, yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know. I think not an unimportant point.
I'm fed up with, before Trump makes a point about the World Cup, that he feels the need to say, we call it soccer here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we know that.
That's not going to get tiring.
We know that.
Anytime soon.
But.
You're looking for my excitement levels. Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I meant to bring in, I have a Mexico retro kind of half sip.
Oh, nice.
I meant to bring it in. So if they win today, I'll wear it tomorrow.
Okay.
Wear it tomorrow, yeah. I'm excited,
The excitement had didn't kick in for me until the last couple of days, particularly being in here on Tuesday. We did a World Cup special that definitely ramped up the levels of excitement / didn't really pay any attention to it before that.
Yeah.
And then I watched England-Costa Rica last night. A little bit of a ramping up of the excitement again, like when the game eventually got... Actually, the 10 o'clock kickoff, saw a lot of people giving out about it. Totally suited me. Kids were in bed. I bought me an extra whatever it was, a couple of hours. Happy days. England are just a funny... One part of me, and bear with me now before you jump down my throat here. One part of me started to think... So I read the Athletic preview during the week and, you know, the 100 journalists... It might have been slightly less than that, but the 100 journalists that they asked who was going to win the tournament... I think one of them might have said England. Obviously, your France's, your Spain's, you have your occasional shout for your Brazil's or your Argentina's, but England didn't. And the person who mentioned it kind of had to caveat the whole thing by saying, well, look, here's the reason it might also not happen. But I did start to wonder if we're sleeping in England winning the World Cup. I did say, don't jump down my throat. And
Well, then you said something like that then.
I think we're wide awake going into England, actually.
I can understand that. But they have this sprinkling of, like, this sublime and the ridiculous. Even within, definitely within the team, but in the squad, and even within players. Watching Jordan Pickford last night, again, he's probably on his day, would be one of the best goalkeepers in the world in terms of his ability to make unbelievable saves, point blank stuff, top corner stuff. Sensational player, like.
One of the best in the world.
And a good vibes man. Give me the on his day bit, right? Because he does mix it with the other stuff.
Sorry, I've stopped you to the goalkeeper. Keep going, yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, I know. We're not going to go through position by position, but like, again, last night, put your foot through the ball moment where he decides, oh no, I'm Harry Kane here. And against better opposition, we'll get found out with that, as he has done before. But obviously they have, you know, in the centre midfield... A player who's just won the Premier League and, you know, certainly considered in that world-class bracket. They have a player who's won the Bundesliga, who's a previous winner of the Ballon d'Or, the Golden Boot, I should say. They have a player incoming to Barcelona, a player outgoing of Barcelona, a player who looked really good last night, who's playing for Real Madrid. You know, I'm touching on all the high points here. They do have a kind of defence that's flung together, and that might be the major weakness.
Well, they also did have a Premier League champion, probably the best player in the Premier League champions on the bench as well, in Bukayo Saka. Mm. And they had Mark Gahey on the bench as well.
Yeah.
They do have five or six genuine superstars. The problem is the supplementary players around that. And the problem is also some of those superstars are not great characters to have around the dressing room when things start to go wrong. I actually asked John Bruin on Monday.
Bellingham you're talking about, is it?
Bellingham, of course, yeah. So John is, he's obviously a well-respected English journalist who has been following the team for years, and I asked him, when does he think, or how does he think the tournament is going to go for England? And he said, well, the tournament's going to go exactly how every other tournament has gone for England. They'll do really well until they meet a team that are good at football. And then that's when it started to unravel.
They've always had five or six superstars. That's nothing new.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, if anything, they've normally had more. This time they probably don't have as many as they may have had in previous tournaments. I wouldn't completely write them off. But
they're not a semi-final team.
Yeah, that's what they should be aiming to, get to a semi-final for sure. It's just you'd never hang your hat on them.
But you know, World Cups can also make players. Do you know? Like, I know City are in again for Elliot Anderson starts last night. He'd probably start with Declan Rice.
Just famously never has for England.
Yeah, not maybe this is the time 66. When there's a German at the wheel and...
Maybe.
You're not having it.
It's a fairly young team as well, going through. Like, yeah. It is, you know, they have some years in it at least, but I just don't see it. There's, like, if you're talking about quality and you want to talk about superstars, like, look at France.
Mm. Yeah.
Look at Spain. Like,
what was Philippe's case during the week that he doesn't think France are going to win it?
He thinks that the team is unbalanced, that the defence is not good enough, which is a fair point. Oof, they've got Upamecano and Konate playing in centre-half, so there is weaknesses there. He also doesn't think that the whole idea of Deschamps getting the best out of Mbappe is particularly true.
Mm.
So, look, he made a fair case for it. There's weaknesses in every team. I mean, Lamine Yamal's not going to be playing for the vast majority of the start of the tournament for Spain. Whether that'll matter or not, we'll wait and see. Brazil, Neymar's not going to be there for quite a substantial period of it, but Tim Vickery actually thinks that's a good thing. He thinks that a fresh but injury-free Neymar coming into the end of the tournament is going to be a good weapon against the tired legs of the rest of the tournament. So, I mean, there's arguments to be made everywhere.
Yeah. You're not having my point in it.
I will take some pleasure, if England do go on to win it, that it's a German that leads them there.
Yeah.
That will bring me a small bit of pleasure in a dark day.
I also enjoyed, last point of the game last night, the overreaction to, like, it's a meaningless friendly pre-tournament.
Yeah.
Your main objective is to actually get through it with no injuries. That'd be ahead of losing the game 3-0. They won it 3-0. Massive overreaction. Nanu Madueke makes an unbelievable run. Yep. Brilliant pass from, can't think who it was. Rice might have been off the pitch at the time. Whoever.
I think it was Rice, yeah.
Through he goes. Couple of beautiful, sublime touches. Like, if he finishes it, there's a clamour for the lad. He doesn't finish it. He does all the hard work, makes a fool of the keeper, gets an open goal, and then hits the post.
Makes a fool of himself.
And people are going buck crazy for it.
Yeah, I think this is just the most English football fan thing ever. It's like absolutely tearing down one of your players. Like, I suppose the reaction to it was that, you know, Morgan Gibbs-White should be there in place of him. That's been the talk over the last couple of weeks, but he's not there. So just get on with it. Like, Madueke is there. He probably won't start any games. Maybe if they win their first two games in the group stage, they might start him for the third. Who knows? But it's tearing their own players down before the tournament's even started.
Relax, lads.
I'm not saying this is why they don't win anything, but it certainly doesn't help.
No. Yap Westmead, who you'd sort of expect a little bit more from on YouTube, says, football, you clown, in relation to our soccer conversation earlier.
Couldn't agree more.
Another man who needs to relax the cacks.
Yeah. Well, we all need to relax, Adrian.
And chill.
According to Gianni Infantino. He held his first proper press conference in about 3 years last night, and it was like a stand-up comedy act, if you can find some of the things that he's saying funny. It's more funny in the sense of how ridiculous they were. He initially went on his monologue for 12 minutes, which is not unusual for the FIFA president to do so ahead of a major tournament. But they were supposed to start the questions then after 12 minutes, and he did his one more thing, and his one more thing ended up being 18 minutes. So he spoke for 30 minutes straight, no questions, before taking questions for another 30 minutes. So the press conference was about an hour, and we're going to bring you some of that here now. So Just to give you a flavour of that monologue, so a lot of people will have seen the Chill Relax at this stage, his exchange with Dan Rowan from the BBC, but that actually comes from his original point during this monologue where he's asked about, or he's speaking about the visa situation and what's going on in America and the build up to this World Cup, and he just wants us to chill and relax. Mm.
Of course it is unfortunate as well what happened to Omar, the referee from Somalia. But again, we don't control everything. We try, we will discuss, we will speak, we will see. Maybe sometimes it's good as well to just, you know, chill, relax. We work on everything. We try to solve everything. Sometimes to immediately start screaming and shouting has the opposite effect of finding a solution. Believe me when I tell you, or don't believe me if you don't want, but we try always to find solutions. But then we need to respect that we are not the kings of the world who can rule over governments and police forces and I don't know what. We are a sports organization. We try to do our best with the means that we have to make as much as possible. And in this, and I conclude, we want to unite the world. And if I can ask you one thing, again, if you want to criticize me, it's fine. It's okay. But promote the unity of the World Cup. Promote people coming to the World Cup, feeling those emotions that all of you have been feeling when you were children, and I hope you can still feel them now.
We are but a humble sports organization worth several billion. Well, what can we do here, Adrian? Mm. What can we do? We're not kingmakers.
I think that the half-an-hour monologue is indicative of somebody who obviously needs the platform, wants the platform, desires the platform, ensures he gets the platform. It was the 3.5-year anniversary of his Today I Feel, et cetera, speech. And he sort of obviously has his few key bits that he needs to get out here. Ken Early, very interesting this on the Irish Times today. Infantino is full of self-praise as he avoids the hard question. Like you said, Enda, he's doing a half hour of monologue and a half hour of like questions. Ken points out he began by praising himself for getting Iran to the World Cup. And then he quotes, "I don't know who else would have been able to ensure that in these circumstances, which we do not influence, Iran could come and play." Just let that one settle in for a second. "I do not know who else would have been able to ensure that in these circumstances, which we do not influence, Iran could come and play. So I am responsible for Iran being here, but we cannot influence it." Yeah. So those two things absolutely cannot sit side by side. It's either one or the other.
Give me some praise, but also it wasn't me.
Yeah.
I have no influence on things that went against it, but give me some praise on the things that you're happy about, is essentially what he's saying there.
Oh, it's bizarre. Like, the promote unity thing is so, like, so tone deaf. It's like you're sitting here in a press conference room because there's questions being asked about people not being allowed into the country and to be able to participate in your tournament. And you're talking about unity. You're like, write about the unity that's going on. Look at the great job we're doing. It's so inclusive. It's actually the exact opposite.
Well, the entirety of the press conference was filled with contradictions where he would talk about everything that's going wrong and then the next sentence would follow up with, "This is the best World Cup that we're ever going to see."
Yeah. So, now, in fairness, like, listen, sorry, restart that sentence. I suppose the rationale for Infantino here is that, like, he has made his bed, right? So whatever happens, wherever the World Cup is hosted, at that point, he has no option but to obviously go and bat for particularly the main host nation, let's call them. I actually don't know what the split of games are, but obviously they're getting the important games. So there's no option. Like, the venial sin, if you want to word it that way, was the awarding of it there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Once that's done, all this stuff is expected.
Well, some might expect him to think, maybe, are you not embarrassed standing up here like this and answering these questions?
But I think that is to misread the personality that we're dealing with.
Well, Exactly, Adrian. And Dan Rowan from the BBC, that was his exact line of questioning here in this clip, where he asks Infantino, is he not just embarrassed at this whole situation now that has gotten out of his control and out of his hands?
You know, in 2035, I think, we hope, the Women's World Cup will be in the UK, right? Would you find it normal that FIFA would dictate to the British government who to let in the country and who not to let in the country? I don't know. Maybe you find it normal. I would like, personally. On the other side, the reality of the matter is that in every country there are governments. Try to get into the UK, into Germany, into Switzerland without a visa. Try to get a visa if you are from a certain country. It's not easy. That's what I want to say. It's not easy when you have 300,000 accredited people, majority of which from outside of the US, to process them, to vet them. You don't know. Unfortunately, our world is, you know, a very aggressive world, and security goes above everything, and you need to respect the decisions which are taken. And when I say to chill, I don't mean to chill and do nothing. I mean to trust us that we are working behind the scenes. We are trying to understand, and there are things we can know, things we cannot know, things we are told, things we are not told. And we always try to make the situation as positive as possible, and to find a solution.
The solution of here, of course, is the fact that Omar Artan cannot referee at this World Cup.
Mm. I think his point about if this, the Women's World Cup is held in the UK, do you expect him to get involved in the minutiae of visas, etc.? The point is to give it to a country where you know that's going to be handled well. We're not, nobody expects or wants, and it would be totally inappropriate, obviously, for, you know, a sporting organisation to be getting involved in conversations like that, other than maybe to call it out when they see it. But equally, I think the whole point would be to give it to a country where we can feel assured that these things have been dealt with correctly.
Yeah, it's been disgraceful. Like, it's not just the thing of, you know, people aren't being allowed in the country, it's the way they're being treated as well. Like, you're hearing about 12-hour interrogation interviews, and, you know, people are getting their phones taken away and being searched through, and, like, it's just, it comes across as third world, really. It doesn't feel like a country of the status of the US, so to speak. And I know, like, people will make the argument that it's a third world country with a Gucci belt on, but, like, it is, it's almost shocking. If it was any other country than the US, you'd be completely shocked. But I don't know, I'm getting sick of Gianni infatuated by Trump, if I'm to call him that. I'm getting absolutely, I've fatigue for him. I just have no interest to listen to him anymore.
Yeah, I think in fairness, he'll tend to go quiet now for a little bit. You know, that's his big thing. That's his platform. Yeah. He'll be back in some style, obviously, a little bit later in the tournament, but
going quiet, except for this final clip that we have.
Yeah,
later,
we won't have to deal with this every day, Darren.
Yeah. I mean, so we do have one final clip from the Infantino press conference, and it was based around the tickets, because obviously the ticket prices have been outrageous for this, and FIFA have been accused of actually selling their tickets on third-party websites now, because they can't take the prices down on their own website, so they're selling them through third-party. That was reported in the Times last week. So he was asked about the ticket prices, and as you mentioned, Adrian, he wants a lot of praise for good things, and he wanted some praise like another American politician here as well.
Well, let me say one thing as well at the outset. Let me congratulate Mayor Mamdani from New York. I was with him day before yesterday, actually. I have to congratulate him because he put on sale 1,000 tickets at $50 a couple of months ago, and since then he gets fantastic news. We put on sale 130,000 tickets at $60, and we don't get great news. Probably has better communication people than us, or probably he's better than me, I don't know. But I want to congratulate him, of course, for that, and for that initiative as well. And to reiterate that the starting price is at $60, that the market, everything I said before, the market is here what it is, that if you sell it at a lower price point, and again, this has been part of intense and extensive analysis in this particular market, it would have gone, which is perfectly legal in this country, in secondary markets at much, much, much higher prices. And where would the money go then? Well, to those who organize secondary market or black market activities and not to football. So every dollar that comes in goes back into the development of football. We have one competition every 4 years that generates revenues. The 47 other months out of the 48 of 4 years, we are investing this revenue in the growth of the game. Nobody else is doing that. Nobody. Nobody. This allows us to maintain as well free TV. I said we could put everything on pay. We would generate 30 billion revenues, probably. But then you have billions of people in the world who would not be able to watch the World Cup. So the soul and the heart is the fans in the stadiums, it's the fans in the fan zones, it's the fans at home, it's every football fan. We want to bring the World Cup to every football fan. And this is what this price structure is, this is what dynamic pricing is as well. We had the Club World Cup last year, the prices of some matches went up, others went down. In this situation, they could have gone down as well. They didn't really go down. This shows that maybe the price point was the right one.
They could have gone down. They didn't, but they could have. Also, don't threaten us with a good time. We could charge you to watch these games as well, but we don't. Yeah. Because we're such good guys.
They couldn't, even they couldn't do that. Like, it would just ruin their own thing. You know, like, it would kill, sorry, would it kill the World Cup? I don't know. It would certainly
damage it.
Damage it and damage a lot of their ability to bring in commercial sponsorship and, you know, talk about the dream and all these other things. So, I wish that I would love if we could just not have all of this stuff. Like, there's no need for all of this stuff. There's no need for these press conferences. No need for these. This could all be handled in a very different way. We could actually be discussing how amazing the football is going to be.
Well, there are people in our comments saying, just talk about the football. Don't talk about the politics. Ah, we have to talk about it.
You do.
I mean,
you do.
You can't ignore
football hasn't even started.
No. Well, apart from last night's really important friendly. I'm waking up at the minute. Are we done with the World Cup?
We're done with Infantino for now. Yeah, Dara will be delighted to hear.
I'm waking up at the minute with the Pulp song, What is this feeling called love? Why here, okay. Why now? Do you know that one?
Nope.
You're going to have to sing it.
I'm probably not going to do that, but urge you to go and listen to it after the show. Why you, why here, why now? And I'm sort of waking up a little bit of that butterfly feeling in my stomach. You know that first bit where your eyes blink to open and you stare at the ceiling? Like, all I can, you know, it's just thoughts about the summer that lays ahead, the days that we've had, the days that lay in store, Dara. You know, the three extra times in a row, the five championships win in a row that has never been had before. What is this feeling called love? It's butterflies in the stomach, tickets in the pocket for Salt Hill
on
Sunday afternoon. Oh. Sold out. And I see Frank Roach in the Independent today saying that the expectation is there'll be more Westmeath fans than Galway fans. I take a giant gulp when I say that because, you know. But, you know, halftime in the Cavan game a couple of weeks ago, I did think, We've had a good run. This has been fun. I still love you, but
I heard there was New York, Westmead fans leaving.
Huh?
There was Westmead fans leaving the whole time. Oh, I heard there was.
Well, they might have been going to get shelter because it started to bucket the bad stuff.
It's been raining. Is that what you're saying?
Like the worst. Matthew Brennan of this parish had said before, he'd never seen rain like it before. Anyway, there is clearly a bit of my excitement about this whole thing. This is an unusual feeling for me. I've never really had this before because normally, you know, it's your royalties, your Donegals and your Kerrys and your Dublins and your Galways and your Mayos and all the usual suspects. The likes of us, Dara, do not get to dine at this table. But this year is just different.
Speak for yourself there. No, you're right though, you're right. And it should be, you should bask in it.
It's beautiful.
Enjoy it. And I don't think it's coming to an end. Well, they have one more game anyway.
At least.
Regardless of what happens.
Yeah.
But I'd fancy us to give them a rattle at the same time.
If
that is true around the support that's showing up in Salt Hill, the Joe Show might just go on for a couple more games.
One of the papers today saying that Galway are something like 5-1 on. I think 5-1 on to win it.
That's been the tale of your tape, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Every single game you've
had more odds on.
Well, apart from the Cavan game, of course.
Dublin were 7-1 on for the Leinster final.
Yeah, even the Meath game, you weren't really fancy. Kildare was fairly close, if I remember correctly.
It was another
on the
one
odds.
Of the extra times, yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and played out that way. It's a decent crop of players, though. It's not like a flash in the pan thing,
it isn't, and it's also, but equally, it's also totally bonus territory. And I hope the wins don't come off, and I don't think they will. Like, I don't think there's going to be any great, whoever wins the game, it's not going to be by landslide either way. I don't really see that. The only worry I have is that obviously having conceded 4 goals to Cavan the last day, having conceded none for 3.5 years before that, mildly exaggerating, that, you know, the belief of the Tigerish defence suddenly disappears a little bit. Ciarán Murphy talks in the Irish Times this morning about this being the last round of non-knockout games, 2A this weekend.
And it's fantastic that we get to see them all as well.
Well, we don't. Donegal, Dublin and Kerry games, with no disrespect to their opposition, none of those will be seen anywhere unless you can get to them.
Well, I think it's massive disrespect to their opposition, actually.
Huge.
In the sense
huge.
Of...
Sorry, my titling of the games.
Yeah, of course. I mean in the sense of it feels like the GAA have editorialised here, in the sense of Kildare and Kerry, that's a knockout game. Yep. And it feels like, I'm not saying it is what they've made, the decision that they've made, but it feels like they've made the decision based off, well, Kerry are going to win that game anyway. Sure, what's the point in showing that?
Yeah, but they're probably right about that.
They may be right. Like, they may be wrong,
but like, that's not
how sport is. We may get Kerry knocked out of the GAA Championship and not have anybody see it.
Yeah.
And that seems...
If Kerry falls in the wood and nobody sees it, maybe they just jimmy them back into the ground Monday morning.
Potentially.
You could maybe say this. I wouldn't be writing off Cork at the same time either, though.
Would you not?
No, like, I actually think Cork are a cracking team, like, on their day. Like, they're Division 2 champions.
Donegal have just beaten the All-Ireland champions...
Sorry, they're not Division 2 champions. The runners-up in Division 2.
That's the premise.
It's a one-off game, like.
I'm not saying that I agree with that not being on TV in any way, shape or form. However, I do think you can make the argument that any of the 2A games, they're not essential viewing this weekend. They're important, but they're not essential. The knockout 2B games, they're knockout games.
Yeah.
We are going to not see some of those teams again this year.
Well, the only difficulty is that, like, I think Galway and Westmeath is going to be close. I think most neutral observers who aren't me would say the same thing. Yeah. Whereas there is a possibility, your point notwithstanding, Derek, like, if I am looking at that, editorialising it, which is ultimately what happens, possibly Donegal are 5, 6, 7 points ahead at halftime. It is a possibility.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I'm not sure about the Dublin-Cavan game. I think that could be the one that's a bit of a shock this weekend. But I feel similarly about Kerry Kildare. All of that could be proven wrong. Like you said, it's a one-off match. Who knows? But equally, you have to make a call at a juncture before the game. And I do understand some of that rationale. I also think, and I've made this point before, that, well, you do, ultimately.
But like, GAA Plus, is that not what it was brought in to bring all the games to us?
I think that we've seen GAA Plus and the extra games that it's brought in conjunction with, obviously, the games that are on RT, and we're moving into a Skyification of Gaelic games, in the sense that when Sky came in, you know, over a period of years, with the other partners that are there, broadcasters that are there, suddenly almost every game is shown on TV. Like, you're nearly outraged when you can't get to see Wolves and West Brom on a Tuesday. Why is this game not this crazy stuff?
Yeah.
And we're sort of in that space now with GAA, where the more we've gotten access to, the more we demand.
I'll restate my previous point. Is that not what GAA Plus was brought in for, though?
I wouldn't have thought so. No, to show every game.
Like, yeah.
No,
like,
I don't
think
so. Like,
at the stage of All-Ireland Championship. 100%.
I don't think that's why it was brought in. Well, having said all that,
I think a lot of people were under the impression of that was the point of it.
I think the point was to show more games, and they will say that there's no, you know, there's never been a point where more games have been shown. And I'm sure all of that is true. But obviously we have a tweaked, we have a different system than we had before in terms of the format.
Yeah, are we one step away from Infantino with that though? In the sense of you can make the argument, well, I mean, give us some praise. There's more games on now than ever before. Fair enough, you missed Dublin getting knocked out of the championship this year, but we did show more games, so therefore that's
like,
okay.
Sorry, this game isn't in the back arse nowhere. It's not like this isn't set up to be televised. It's in Breffni Park. There are TV stations and like there's the whole storyline of Jared Brennan coming back from a, you know,
I understand it. I do understand, but I'm just saying that there's a context to all of these things, and like there's an expense involved. Technology is probably at a point where you could stick a couple of cameras in, and people are, particularly post COVID, sort of, if you're saying to people like you're getting no punditry, you're just getting the game. We're going to, you know, it's not going to be all bells and whistles. I think people, Cork fans, will be delighted with that this weekend. Yeah, would love just to see it. So I do get that.
To be honest, I am with you on your general point on the oversaturation of games on if available to be televised as we sit, because I do think you have opened that door to more people saying, why is this game not being shown, or why is this game not being shown? But now that Pandora's box is open, you can't really close it and close it in the most important parts of the season. Like, you had games that were televised that weren't as important as the games that are coming up this week.
Yeah.
And now suddenly we have actual important knockout games that aren't on TV.
All I'm saying is they wouldn't view it through the lens of being closed. They would say we're showing more games than anybody's ever shown before. And like that's true. Mm-hmm. But I genuinely believe that we have more of a thirst for games the more we're seeing.
Oh, totally. I completely agree with you. And I think it is ridiculous that every weekend we get to the point of whether it's football or hurling, whichever is preferenced on that week when it comes to especially terrestrial TV, the other side of the groups are always saying, well, why is this game not in TV? Why is this game on? Why is this game not? Like, everyone's thing becomes the most important thing whenever you make everything free or make everything free and available to them. So, like,
I don't think that's what's going on here, though.
For example, I'll give you an example of this. When the Sunday game 2 weeks ago, it was a football weekend and you had a cohort of hurling fans, and I appreciate it's online so it's not a true reflection of the entirety of the group, but you had hurling fans online complaining that the Sunday game preferenced football for the first 45 minutes of the program before putting hurling in the middle. You gotta preference something at some point. Something needs to be, you do need to editorialize at some point. I actually just probably maybe disagree with the exact type of editorializing they've done this weekend.
Anyway. I'm done with it.
Well, here's what's happening on the back pages. I totally take the point. Like, and also, and people are saying in the YouTube comes here, if I am from Cork and I am paying my annual GEA Plus subscription, I am going to be annoyed that I can't see that game.
And it's a hell of a trip to Donegal from Cork as well. That shouldn't be lost in this argument as well.
Irish Daily Mail, Taylor Frenzy, incredible demand for Croker tickets with fight expected to sell out quickly, writes Mark Gallagher here. This is the news that 40,000 tickets have been sold for the Katie Taylor fight v Flora Peely on September the 5th at Croke Park. This is the bit where everybody who was involved in the organisation of this event sits back in the chair and says, woof, job pretty much done if we've sold 40,000 up to now. I mean, there is a possibility that it goes down to a plateau now for the next little while. There'll be another frenzy close at the time, but by and large, 40,000 in the bank.
Yeah, huge success. And you'd expect once it goes on general sale that you're probably looking at like at least 65,000-70,000 at this point. It may not sell out completely.
I think I've changed my view on based off the 40,000. I think.
Yeah, well, I'm going worst case scenario here.
Yeah,
I said from the start I think it will sell out, but yeah, I think you're guaranteed a good crowd now, which is amazing. And Maybe some people like kind of focus too much on the undercard and different things around the fight. Like, it is, like we were speaking before the show, it is just the event of it, and I think that's enough for a lot of people. And it's great to see as well, because I suppose you don't really know until something of this magnitude comes around what this actual support for Katie Taylor is like. Because, you know, you see the reaction online to fights and the viewing figures for fights, but the actual on the ground support is a bit different. So when something like this comes around, you're like, okay, that the nation really does care about Katie Taylor. Not that I'm suggesting they didn't, but this really, really cements it.
Would it be enough to put bums on seats?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of question, yeah.
After hearing this news, Eddie Hearn took a deep swig of his cigar and said, let's just say it moved me. To a bigger house.
What sort of a cigar is he having that he has a swig of it? Is this the question?
Or not a swig. As you can tell, I'm not a smoker.
FIFA boss says chill as World Cup kicks off. Wards Ireland are on a special journey. And GAA are tuned out to the needs of the fans. Just on that topic we've been discussing. Mark Gallagher switched off, he says, inside. On a jam-packed weekend of football action, the GAA are scoring a massive own goal with their scant TV coverage, which we've been discussing. We'll go to the Irish Times next. This is, I love being part of the group. I love the boys. They're my best friends. This is Aidan Forker in conversation with Gordon Manning ahead of the weekend. Ciarán Murphy's piece we mentioned a bit earlier on. We are now entering the high wire part of the season. Dublin have no fear of Munster ahead of Clare clash, says the goalkeeper Eddie Gibbons. And a good piece inside from, I mentioned the Ken Early piece already, but also Dave Hannigan, who's based obviously in the US. And he's writing about not the World Cup, but sorry, the paper's gotten away from me here. Ali's Croke Park fight was a commercial flop. Can Katie Taylor avoid the same fate? Just reflections on the 1972 fight, I think it was, between Muhammad Ali and Al Blue Lewis. I've never heard him called Al Lewis before. When you hear, unless you hear Al Blue Lewis, you're like, who are you talking about? Anyway, they brought him here. He did a massive tour. The Butty Sugrue, is that a name that rings a bell? There's been some great documentaries made about Butty Sugrue, and I definitely recommend you go and have a look at them. He's a former Irish promoter. He was the one responsible for bringing Ali over, had done a deal with the bank manager, Williams and Glyn Bank in London, borrowed 300 grand to make it happen. And to cover that 300 grand, they needed 30,000 people to pay in. 18,725 was the number that eventually paid in for the fight, and there was a sense that maybe he had over-promoted the thing, that people had too much access to Ali and then just got a bit fatigued with the whole lot. The poor old bank manager who was dealing with the whole thing suffered a stroke and died on hearing that the takings were not what they should have been.
Wow.
Jesus. Okay.
Anyway, that's it. Butty Sugrue, like a character out of Dunbelievables.
Paul Rouse did a piece on him and Off the Ball years ago, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great character. Irish Independent 4 weekend sellouts as Gaelic football fever grips the race for Sam. Doris merges a doubt for Leinster ahead of the URC final. Shefflin the favourite, but Cats in no hurry for Ling's successor. This is the first of these types of stories, certainly that I've seen anyway, that it looks like Henry Shefflin is the man in demand. Interviews to begin in the coming weeks, nominations to be received. And there are obviously a list of people here, Brian Downing at Kildare, Eddie Brennan in the mix, and others. But it looks like Henry Shefflin, the current Kilkenny under 20 manager, is the favourite to take over from Derek Ling. Maybe not that surprising.
No. Yeah, we spoke about this with Tommy Walsh, and I asked him, does he think that Henry would take this job given, suppose, the perceived lack of talent coming through in Kilkenny? It's a pretty precarious job. And given that his Galway stint didn't go all that well, like, is this something that he'd be willing to risk? And Tommy was like, yeah, Henry will have no issue taking this job. He's afraid of nothing. He's not afraid of a challenge. And it will be interesting to see if Henry Shefflin does take it, how much of the county he taps in outside of like the Ballyhales of the world, because like, obviously that's a club that he'll have strong affiliation with. He'll know the players coming through. He'll know the cousins of the players coming through. Ballyhale's a very small place, so he's well connected in that area. But Kilkenny need to start tapping into the talent across the county as well, you'd think.
Yeah. I think he's been building his career up to this point as well, even the Galway stint.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers the frosty handshake with Brian Cody that we assumed was to be some kind of signal of, you know, you're not loyal to your county. But he's obviously done unbelievable stuff at Ballyhale back at the under-20 setup, and that's his way in. Yeah.
He was probably about maybe 2-3 years too early with the Galway thing. Now, looking at the squad that Galway are building and looking at the underage structures that are coming through, they did the Triple Crown in Leinster this year. So, I mean, like, was he unlucky in just with the timing at Galway?
Yeah. Or
is it a true reflection of who he is? Because if you see what he did with Ballyhale, I guess it was a little bit surprising that the Galway thing didn't work out.
Mm. Yeah. Spike calls out Ali as Taylor ticket sales surge past 40,000. This is definitely a headline that makes you start reading. Why is he calling out Ali? Crazy. What's happening here? Anyway, Morris Brosnan and Joe Callaghan writing that Gary O'Sullivan, Spike O'Sullivan wants to add even more history to the Taylor Dublin farewell by bringing an Ali back to Croke Park for a sensational bout. He's called out Nico Ali, grandson of Muhammad Ali, for a middleweight showdown on the undercard. I've certainly had an extra bit of spice to it.
It'd be interesting, yeah.
Like I'll go with Gin Joint because that's what they're getting at here in the back page of the Irish Daily Star. Gin Joint, Keen fires an amazing blast at Aston Villa and Scotland star John. And a bad day, he's a pub player. Feels.
Did he
and
say
it's
that
picked
himself?
Up on all of the. It's picked up on all of the papers today. What was the actual quote? And is that what you're asking me?
Did he? No, I'm asking. Did he call himself a pub player in a bad day,
or no, someone who's describing
them? Keane said that.
Yeah.
About John McGinn.
Yeah. I get you. I know you're. This is what you're looking for here. He's one of these fellas. When he's bad, when he has his bad days, he does look like a pub player. When he's off it, he looks shocking. If you watch him long enough, and what the stats are. When he's in the team week in, week out, if these managers all like him, you'd have him in your group, absolutely. And it's no surprise Villa are doing well. He's at the forefront of that.
Okay, so it's an overarching positive point.
When he's bad, he's bad. When he's good, he's good. Is that a kind of a truism that sort of applies to kind of everybody?
Every single player ever, yeah, I think so.
But listen, it's Roy Keane. He's said that he's like a pub player. The headlines write themselves.
Yeah, I feel like Roy Keane knows a thing or two about playing midfield, so I don't think I'm in any position to trump him and his opinion here.
It's a big World Cup kickoff tonight. McGinn not a tonic. These are really ones to be read.
That's terrible.
Than, well, you know,
it's a shocking headline.
Gin.
Yeah,
yeah. Keane O'Brien, Scott Starr, a pub player when he's off it, but he does still admire Villain, which is a lot to squeeze into one sub headline, and I do admire them for giving like context to the story. Fair play. And lastly, we go. That was the Mirror, and then lastly, we go to the Sun. Infant formula, Gianni. Sometimes it's good to just chill and relax. Bannon, Smalley, and Ref. Unfortunate, says Chief. And City Hunt. This is a story that Elliot Anderson, who's probably about to make an even bigger name for himself this summer, is very much the subject of the fluttering eyelashes of Manchester City. They've launched a British record bid with 106 million plus a series of add-ons, taking the past 120 million. For the Nottingham Forest and England star. You having that?
Yeah, I love him. I think he's a great
player. Good player, yeah.
Yeah, he's, and I, as much as I do not watch England in the vein of supporting them, he's a player that I thoroughly enjoy watching. There's loads of, I'd say, players in the England team that I will enjoy watching at the tournament. They are just really good players and you have to appreciate them when they're...
When you're at the, what do you, if you're Forest, what do? You take the 106/120 or do you stall it for a couple of weeks until you know that he's going to make an even bigger name for himself and squeeze another 10 or 20 million out of it?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like Man United are going to counter Man City's bid here. I think they're going to leave him at it, so I don't know if Forest are going to get all that much more by the sounds of it.
Shanae, I think.
Yep, yeah, that's us.
Right. I had you something else to say?
Mention the Knicks.
Go on.
Oof. The biggest comeback in NBA Finals history last night. 29 points they were down in the second quarter.
At the Garden.
And I don't think it's any coincidence that it was Trump. The one game they've lost in these finals, they're 3-1 up now, one game away from winning. Trump was at that game and was booed out the gaff from the very start.
During the national anthem?
During the national anthem, yes. And yesterday, it was an incredible comeback last night. 29 points, as I said. So Knicks mania has taken over. And I'd almost be concerned for the city of New York right now. They're going mental.
Too much
support. That would have happened regardless of what happened in these finals. Win or lose, they were going mental. But it's happening regardless.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Rugby.
No, I'll probably apologise for the first one. I think that's where you have to get rid of that in rugby. You know, tucked shoulder to the head. But yeah, because then guys aren't going to jackal, so you know, that just, my only thing for me now was to say sorry for that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.